entertaining programs. This is the IE America Radio Network.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Questions continue about the possibility U.S. intelligence on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction programs was exaggerated to justify going to war in the Middle East. Latest accusations coming in today's Washington Post, which says some CIA analysts felt pressured by a top defense official to make the facts jibe with the administration's agenda. More on the story now from correspondent Laura Iyama.
One former defense intelligence official describes Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz as a browbeater who, in his words, treated the analysts' work with contempt. Wolfowitz reportedly wanted to find a link between al-Qaeda and Iraq, pressuring analysts to substantiate allegations in a book tying Iraq to the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Two Pentagon officials have told reporters there was no pressure on anybody to slant intelligence. Laura Iyama, Washington.
President Bush, meanwhile, is promising evidence of weapons of mass destruction in Iraq will be found. Mr. Bush is heading home after wrapping up a foreign trip capped by a Middle East peace summit with both the Israeli and Palestinian prime ministers. During a visit earlier today with U.S. soldiers in Qatar, the president vowed to, quote, reveal the truth about Saddam Hussein's weapons programs. In Britain, meanwhile, the failure to find those weapons of mass destruction in Iraq is also causing political trouble for Prime Minister Tony Blair. Attorney General John Ashcroft says the U.S. is enjoying a great deal of success in the global war on terrorism, but there's still a lot to be done. Also, during testimony today before Congress, Ashcroft swore the Patriot Act is a good thing for America.
The Patriot Act gave us the tools we need to integrate our law enforcement and intelligence capabilities to win the war on terror. It allowed the Department of Justice to use the same tools on terrorists that we use to combat mobsters or drug dealers.
During that sworn testimony, Ashcroft actually called the Patriot Act a, quote, constitutional weapon, but he didn't say if it was a weapon to defend or attack the Constitution. He said the act has helped officials track and identify hundreds of suspected terrorists within the United States, but he skirted around the question of holding suspects for days without actually formally announcing any charges.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief, Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue, without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen. We're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
The House of Representatives has now approved a ban on partial birth abortions. Debate today, it was graphic, and many supporters of the ban on hand offered up sketches showing sharp instruments being put into the base of the skull of an unborn child. The Senate had already approved a similar bill. The U.S. and South Korea are designing a phased-in troop pullout along the border between North and South Korea. The plan had jangled some nerves in the South, in part because of North Korea's recent nuclear activities. However, the U.S. and South Korea issued a joint statement saying the fundamental goal is to, quote, enhance security on the Korean Peninsula.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
The World Health Organization now says the global outbreak of SARS has, in fact, peaked. Correspondent Suzanne Chislett reports an organization official in China has announced the worst of the crisis is now over.
Speaking in China, WHO representative Henk Beckerdam announced the battle against SARS is being won. His comments come as it's confirmed there have been no new cases of the flu-like virus in Asia for the second consecutive day. But two more people have died of the illness in China, bringing the total number of fatalities there to 336. Mr. Beckerdam says the challenge now is to eliminate SARS, and he's urging health officials around the world to remain vigilant to the disease. Suzanne Chislett reporting.
And the number of people seeking first-time unemployment checks was up last week by about 16,000. First-time claims for state unemployment benefits rose to a 442,000 now. Some analysts say the labor market has yet to feel the overall economic recovery that's taking place in many other sectors. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Petri dishes, grandma's parlor, and well-used tennis shoes. All breeding grounds for yucky mold. Don't wrinkle your nose, because you've got one, too, in your car. When we come back, I'll tell you where.
Rain-X now has a line of car waxes specially designed to protect your car's finish, not just to make it shiny and look good. Any wax can do that. Rain-X car waxes form a protective polymer seal over your car. The same way Rain-X windshield treatment repels water, Rain-X's new line of car waxes repel rain, road grime, UV rays, even tar. For a tough, protective barrier that does more than just keep your car's finish looking great, check out Rain-X's new line of car wax. Rain-X, protection you can see.
Your car's heater and air conditioner provide the perfect breeding ground for smelly mold and mildew. Here's a tip to eliminate these odors. Disconnect the AC compressor before starting your car in the morning. Set the emergency brake and crank your engine. Run your AC on max and in the recirculation mode. Then spray a small can of Lysol in the passenger's foot area behind the glove compartment. Let dry 1 hour and reconnect the compressor. Voila! A car that will smell fresher all season. Now for those tennis shoes. I'm Bobby Likas. Likas, you'll love us. Brought to you by Rain-X Wax, the ultimate shield.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network, America's largest and oldest network providing programming from the center to the left in the United States public discourse. I prefer to call it the radical middle. I think this is where most Americans hang out, that we have a sense that fairness is actually a family value, an American value. We're broadcasting coast to coast on radio stations on the ground. We're broadcasting from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, channel 145. If you have a car with a Sirius receiver in it, and if not, let me give it a plug. We recently got one, and boy, is it a great toy. And streaming live on the Internet all across the world from IEAmericaRadio.com and RadioPower.org. In the news today, actually it was yesterday, but it's worth repeating, this was in The Guardian, the newspaper, one of the leading newspapers in England, and they were quoting Der Tagesspiegel and Die Welt, two German newspapers that were in Singapore, along with Mr. Paul Wolfowitz, affectionately known as Wolfie by George W. And Wolfie gave a speech in Singapore, and during that speech, somebody asked him, and it was particularly appropriate being in Singapore because it's not that far from North Korea, and if the Korean Peninsula were to find itself engulfed in a nuclear war, it would certainly rain messy radioactive stuff onto Singapore. Somebody in the Singaporean audience asked the question, if you are concerned about weapons of mass destruction, why don't you go after North Korea? Because, you know, you might have thought Iraq had them, and maybe they do, and maybe they still do. This is day 78 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. But whether they did or not, we know that North Korea has them. So why don't you go after, you know, are you going to go after North Korea the way you went after Iraq? Essentially, this is the question that was put to Wolfie. And his reply, and I quote, "Let's look at it simply. The most important difference between North Korea and Iraq is that economically we just had no choice in Iraq. The country swims on a sea of oil. End of quote. Of course, earlier in the week, he was quoted in Vanity Fair magazine as saying that the whole weapons of mass destruction thing was basically a scam done to fool the American people and the United Nations, because Iraq is sitting on this sea of oil, and the United States is the largest consumer of oil in the world. We import more than half of our oil, and our national energy policy, developed by Messrs. Cheney and oil industry friends, says, no, we're not going to conserve this stuff. We're going to burn as much as we want, as quickly as we want. And since we here domestically are running out, we will take it from other people anytime and anywhere in any way we want. And as Wolfie said to Vanity Fair, quote, for reasons that have a lot to do with the U.S. government bureaucracy, in other words, you have to have a justification to fight a war, we settled on the one issue that everyone could agree on, weapons of mass destruction, end quote. Paul Wolfowitz, it is the U.S. Deputy Secretary of Defense, and he is a former professor of international relations at Johns Hopkins University, and one of the leading what are called neocons and war hawks in this administration. One of the people who signed off on the Project for a New American Century, which you can find on the internet. If you just type Project New American Century into Google, you'll find it very quickly. And this was a document that was published back in 1998 during the Clinton administration by these guys saying, you know, we really need to go after this oil. So anyhow, we've got a couple of emails from listeners here. We'll get to those in just a little bit. We've got a guest in this hour and a great topic. Our topic for this hour, does government involvement in strengthening the middle class help or hurt democracy? There is this strong position that has been taken by the Bushies and the new right in America that economic freedom is freedom, and that government has no business involving itself in the economics of the nation. And if the rich get richer and the poor get poorer, tough luck. You know, hey, it worked for Dickens, it should work for us. And so to talk about these topics this hour, we have Edward Wolfe, Dr. Edward Wolfe. He is the managing editor of the Review of Income and Wealth, a senior scholar at the Levy Economics Institute of Bard College, a research associate at the National Bureau of Economic Research, the author of many articles published in books and professional journals, and often provides commentary on TV and radio. Dr. Wolfe, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Yeah, great to be on.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm glad to have you here. Let's just go through a little bit of the situation that we're facing right now. What got me interested in talking with you was a fascinating interview with you in the Multinational Monitor, and I'd like to go over some of the points in that. This is called the wealth divide, the growing gap in the United States between the rich and the rest. Let's first of all define wealth for our listeners.
Well, wealth is the stuff that you own. It's things like your home, if you own a business, and then financial assets, money market funds, bank accounts.
So it's our stuff.
And stocks and bonds.
Yeah.
Basically,
what about the wealth of security? Is that not measured by anybody? I used to live in Germany, and there was a very real sense in Europe, and my father's family's from Norway, and I visited there several times, and particularly in Norway and the Scandinavian nations, there's a very strong sense that part of the wealth of the nation is the fact that people feel safe and secure, that if they get sick, they have access to health care, that when they're old, they have a pension, that if disaster overtakes them economically, there is a safety net. Is that type of wealth ever measured?
No, not really, but it's very important. And in fact, as you indicated, there's a lot more of this social safety net in Europe than there is in the United States, and that's not really picked up in our conventional measures.
Yeah, couldn't we argue that collectively that there's individual wealth, there's the stuff that you own and that I own, and then there's the collective wealth, the wealth that we own in common, referred to as the commons, that is administered on our behalf by with our permission and consent by a government that derives its power from the consent of the governed. In other words, our government acting on our behalf administers the commons, and that's part of our wealth as well.
Well, I think it is. I think it's a very real part. If you think in terms of the level of well-being of an individual or quality of life, then these services provided by the government and the income support that the government provides, both are a very real part of one's quality of life and standard of living, so that they should be included in a measure.
So that becomes part of the collective wealth, as it were, the stuff that we all agree, okay, we're going to agree we're going to have Social Security, and so we're going to pay money into it, and it's going to pay money out to us, and that is part of our wealth. And then there's the larger wealth of our national parks, our air, our fresh air, our pure water, our transportation systems. I mean, all those things, our communication systems, our infrastructure, all of these are even our military, our police, our fire departments. These are all part of our wealth collectively too.
Yeah, that's right. They also play into how well off people are. Societies that provide more of that stuff, the people are better off than societies that don't. Absolutely.
Yeah, one of the reasons I mentioned Norway is because for several years in a row, Norway has been listed as the nation in the world with the highest not standard of living, but the highest quality of life. And the United States tends to be very low on those measures. Do you know of anybody who has measured, or do you know of any measurements of what? You know, like you see these things like the debt clock, you know, that say, okay, if we have a $7 trillion debt, that means that, and there's 100 million working families, that means every working family or workers, wage earners in the United States, every wage earner is $70,000 in debt via our government. That is, that's money that the government can only get the money from us, and so eventually we're each going to have to pay $70,000 for that $7 trillion of debt. Has anybody done a similar analysis about the wealth of the United States, the assets that we collectively own?
Well, I have to tell you that we have a group here at the Levy Institute at Bard College that is engaging in exactly that study to try to add into individual income a lot of these benefits that are being provided by the government and the common resources that society owns. So we're in fact exactly engaged in this project at the moment. We don't have numbers yet, but we will soon.
It seems like an important one. I mean, it's the other half of the balance sheet, as it were.
That's exactly true. And if you don't take into account these public goods, you're misstating the level of well-being of a society, and in fact, the failure to do so, I think, really affects public policy, because if you don't include these collective goods, then you think we're better off than we really are. And I think a lot of the policies of the Bush administration are derived from our conventional income measures, which only look at things that individual families receive and don't include these public goods. And then you say, well, the government doesn't do much. But that's because you haven't measured it properly. So I think it has a very important political impact as well.
I absolutely agree. And I hope that when when that study is done and those statistics are available, you'll be broadcasting them far and wide, and you'll include us on our distribution list.
Absolutely, yeah.
Great. Does government involvement in strengthening the middle class, I mean, largely since the Great Depression, the United States government has taken a very proactive role in helping build and establish a middle class. Now, James Madison actually talked about the benefit of this. Jefferson talked about the benefit of this, although those are not the quotes that usually get used by conservatives. But it really got, you know, FDR really got aggressive about it. The idea that our industrial security, our military security, our economic security depends on a strong middle class. And so we had things like the GI Bill, which was, the folks on the right would characterize it as welfare for the middle class. We have the giant tax break for the middle class, also known as the home mortgage deduction, interest deduction. These kinds of things that help build a middle and progressive taxation that help build a middle class in the United States. In the analysis that you've been doing of the growing gap between the rich and the poor in the United States, and I'd like to get into that also after this break. We only have about a minute here left. Are you in this segment? But we'll come back after the break. Does government involvement in strengthening the middle class help or hurt democracy?
Oh, I think it absolutely helps democracy. I think it plays a very vital role in developing democratic society. And as you said, the government has historically been a very active agent in developing a middle class.
Great. Dr. Wolf, we're with Dr. Edward Wolf. We'll stick around. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where we still honor we the people.
James Carver here to talk to you about something that's finer than frog hair, something that really puts the pepper in the gumbo. I'm talking about InPhone, people, a new telephone service that takes 411 and adds a whole lot of giddy-up. Just call 888-411-1111 and you get an operator who will fetch your phone numbers, movie times, driving directions, restaurant reservations. How does that grab you, fella? Let me say that number once more, 888-411-1111. InPhone, how can we help you?
Only 89 cents for any call up to 15 minutes. Only 5 cents a minute after that. Your first 5 calls are free.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit? Bad credit? No credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved. Guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Our scientists have studied and found that our listeners have a lot of stress from the lack of being able to get their questions and comments off of their minds, which can cause nausea, vomiting, and eventually will make you strip down, sit in a corner, and drool while counting pretty yellow and pink elephants flying around.
Okay.
So now, IE America Radio Network is proud to present the IE Hotline. Call and give your comments.
I just wanted to call and let you know your internet station totally rocks off the charts.
Your suggestions.
I think Doug Stephan should be on all day, 24/7. Yeah.
Your questions.
Got a question about Bush. How the hell do you put food on your family? What is that?
Crop growth and biologic growth are by the student's will and volitional control.
Or whatever the heck that just was. So call 1-800-397-8255 and leave a message for any one of our on-air talents. 1-800-397-8255. Operators are standing by. Just kidding. You have to leave a message.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program, bringing you Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle, broadcasting from coast to coast on the IE America Radio Network and on the Sirius Satellite, Channel 145, Sirius Satellite Radio. Does the government involvement in strengthening the middle class help or hurt democracy? We're talking with Dr. Edward Wolfe, who is the author of numerous papers, who is the editor of Review of Income and Wealth, a senior scholar at Levy Economics Institute of Bard College. Dr. Wolfe, is there a website where people can find more information about you or pieces that you've written?
Yes, website is www.levy.org.
Okay.
I have a lot of my working papers on that website.
Great. Thank you. And can you give us a snapshot of what's happened in the United States with regard to wealth in the last 50 years or so?
Well, we've experienced a very striking increase in the degree of wealth inequality in this country. In fact, if we take a picture there, we use the share of wealth owned by the richest 1%. That share has actually doubled since the mid-1970s. It's gone from 20% of total wealth owned by the rich cent all the way up to 40% today. So we've seen a soaring wealth inequality in this country.
That's remarkable. Are you using, by any chance, Census Bureau statistics?
Well, this is actually based on data put out by the Federal Reserve Board of Washington. It's based on what they call their Survey of Consumer Finances. It's done every 3 years. It's probably the best source of data on household wealth.
Uh-huh. Great. The reason I ask is because I was just looking for it. I thought I had it in my Keep It Here file. Apparently not. I had there's an interesting article that was on commondreams.org recently. Pointing out, they had actually interviewed some folks at the Census Bureau who said that anybody who makes over $1 million is considered to make only $1 million for Census Bureau statistics, and therefore the wealth quintiles are all distorted. And the reason that the Census Bureau gave for this was that they couldn't program their computers to count above a million.
Well, the Federal Reserve Board doesn't have that problem, in fact. The data source that I use does not have what's called top coding. They actually have numbers that go up to $150 million.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a beginning. It doesn't count Bill Gates. But what is the impact? What is the consequence on American democracy and the quality of life in America of this growing disparity that you've identified between extreme wealth and the middle class and the poor?
Well, I think there are two ways of looking at it. First of all, simply from a moral or ethical point of view, I think inequality, a lot of people feel that inequality, or at least this degree of inequality, is simply morally bad. And people can object to it for that reason. But even if you don't feel it's a moral issue, it does actually have adverse effects on the economy. A lot of studies recently have shown that a high degree of inequality actually dampens economic growth in a country. And this is because particularly in the United States, where a high degree of wealth and income inequality is associated with large disparities in schooling quality. What you wind up with is a less well-educated workforce.
Yeah, so you have a social and an economic cycle chasing each other. Dr. Wolfe, thank you very much for being on our program today. I appreciate your taking the time from your busy schedule to be with us. And thank you very kindly. www.levy.org is his website. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
The
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
For the IE America Radio Network, this is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm John Hamilton.
Gay rights groups are hailing a tentative new contract between the Associated Press and the News Media Guild. If approved, the three-year deal would provide 1,700 editorial employees of the news service with domestic partner health insurance benefits, including same-sex partners. The deal would also boost wages and the AP's contributions to a 401k plan, as well as limit the amount employee health insurance contributions could rise in each of the contract's first 2 years.
Flight attendants at Northwest Airlines are suing the company for reneging on a promise to repay them for making wage concessions 10 years ago. In 1993, Northwest gave its flight attendants $100 million in preferred stock in exchange for foregoing pay raises for 3 years. The window for selling off that stock opened this week, but the airline now says it won't honor the buyback agreement until August at the earliest. The flight attendants' lawsuit asks for an additional $200 million in damages for bad faith bargaining and breach of contract. Northwest Mechanics made a similar concession and have $135 million worth of stock they've also been forced to delay selling and may join the legal action.
Austrian unions joined their French and German counterparts yesterday in a series of crippling strikes over plans to roll back the country's pension plan. Austria's conservative chancellor, Wolfgang Schüssel, hopes to cut the government's pension payments by 11% while raising the retirement age, a plan that provoked the largest strikes Austria has seen since World War II. Teachers, trash collectors, postal workers, customs officials, police, hotel, transit, and government workers all joined the walkout. The government withdrew from talks with unions last week, insisting that pension reform is necessary due to a combination of a low birth rate and longer life expectancy.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with Animal?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Hi, this is Peter Werby reminding you that my show is now being broadcast from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time on the IE America Radio Network. It's the same show filled with engaged, intelligent talk featuring not just you, the listener, but also a wide range of interesting guests. So if you want to leave right-wing hate radio in the 20th century where it belongs, join me, Peter Werby, weekdays 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time for something entirely different.
I want peace. You want peace.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. We've got an active conversation going on in our chat room. If you go to tomhartman.com, click on the link to the radio show, and then click on the link to the chat room, it'll take you to the International Trade Forum on CompuServe. And if you are not a CompuServe AOL member, you can get a screen name, no charge, don't need to give them a credit card or anything, just fill the thing out and then click the chat button, and it'll bring you into the chat room. We're using this because it's a forum that I've been running for years. It's very robust software. It works really great. Our question this hour, does government involvement in strengthening the middle class help or hurt democracy? Are our economic priorities scrambled? Let me just share with you an ad from the adbusters.org website. This is an ad that they have made available to radio stations and television stations and individuals who want to place them. And I think it really defines one of the issues here in this context. It's just a little less than 30 seconds. Here we go.
For years, economists have defined the economic health of a country by its gross domestic product.
trouble is, every time a forest falls, the GDP goes up. With every oil spill, the GDP goes up. Every time a cancer patient is diagnosed, the GDP goes up. Is this how we measure economic progress? Economists must learn to subtract.
And that's such an important point. This is really that we have really skewed our economic values toward this notion that growth at all costs, and growth includes things like, you know, when people get sick, they need health care, so that grows the health care budget. If you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES. That's 1-800-825-5937 if you would like to offer your thoughts on these topics. So recalibrating our economic priorities. Does the government involvement in strengthening the American middle class, and some would even say in creating the middle class, there are many economists out there who suggest that the middle class in America is a phenomena uniquely to have come about since the 1930s, and that was in large part the result of Roosevelt's New Deal and the reforms associated with it, such as Social Security and minimum wage laws and the growth and strengthening of unions across the United States, that these things brought about a middle class, and that the middle class then, particularly through the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, up until the Reagan Revolution of the 80s, when we slipped into this bizarre supply-side economics that have been disavowed by virtually all competent, incredible economists, that up until that time, we had a growing, strong, vibrant, vital middle class. I remember when I was growing up in the 50s, 60s, and 70s in this country, that many of my friends, their parents worked at Oldsmobile. They worked on the assembly line. And with one union job, one person in the family working a 40-hour week could raise a family, own a home, own a car, put their kids through school, do those things that we call the middle-class dream, as it were, the American dream. And increasingly, those jobs are being shipped overseas. A group of 2,500 of the 1.4 million children in active-duty military families will not qualify for the child care benefit that was included in the last tax bill. An additional 750,000 children who are the parents of military veterans will not be covered. These are people who do pay taxes, or whose parents, these are the children of parents who pay taxes. Many of them, but not all of them, probably the majority of them, pay income taxes as well as all other kinds of taxes, as well as payroll taxes and sales taxes and property taxes, and on it goes. Senator Max Baucus says thousands of military personnel, people who put their lives on the line for our country, will not receive the child tax credit unless we correct the tax bill. And so he's suggesting we should fix this thing. And he came up with a solution where if they closed some corporate loopholes, they could cover all these kids for $3 billion, a pittance compared to the $350 billion of the tax bill that was just the tax cut that was just passed that's actually going to turn into an $800 billion tax bill. So Tom DeLay, delaying justice or fairness, says, okay, cool, the Democrats want something here. Let's play, let's make a deal. He says he will only approve this if it's part of a broader tax cut package. Well, what does that mean? Well, the Senate Republicans have come out with what that means. Senator Charles Grassley has proposed, he's chairman of the Finance Committee, that if they want the children of people who make under $22,000 a year to receive this increased child tax credit, that at the moment, if you earn over $110,000 a year, you won't get back that $400. You won't get a check in the mail. And he says, okay, if you extend that from people making $110,000 a year up to people making $150,000 a year, in other words, let's include the people who make between $110,000 and $150,000 a year. If you'll do that, then we'll give you the people who make $22,000 a year, turning a $3 billion liability for the federal government into an $80 billion liability for the federal government. The White House, according to Ari Fleischer yesterday, says that they support Mr. Grassley's bill. Scott McClellan, another White House spokesman, says, quote, "The president believes Senator Grassley's proposal is one good idea for addressing this problem," end quote. President Bush is not proposing giving the increased child tax credit to minimum wage families in his original tax proposal. He did not propose this. The Democrats had stuck it in, and the Republicans, the credit was dropped in negotiations during House among House and Senate leaders and White House representatives that included no Democrats. Now, the question in my mind is, should the Democrats be pushing for this? Because in my mind, what this does is it just further justifies and ratifies the whole idea of this tax credit in the first place, of this tax cut, rather, in the first place. I think until we pay our bills, we shouldn't be putting more money on the credit card. This seems to me to be just a simple, practical element of government. Does government involvement in strengthening the middle class in America help or hurt democracy? 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 825-5937. Not so long ago, some people begged for an income tax, says Cynthia Crossan in the Wall Street Journal, the day before yesterday, as I recall. She points out that back in 1913, people were demanding an income tax. They were demanding an income tax so strongly that they brought about the creation of a new political party, the populists, and that they got passed through the legislatures of 36 states, the number of states required to ratify an amendment to the Constitution, an actual change, an amendment to the United States Constitution. It's a very difficult thing to have happen. The 16th Amendment, passed in 1913, that authorizes an income tax. Now, there's the tax resistors out there. They say, you know, the Constitution does not authorize an income tax. According to the Constitution, the original Constitution, the only way the federal government could raise the money to pay for its own operation was through tariffs, was through taxing the sale of things, whether they were sold between states or between nations and states within the United States. So we basically had import duties and taxes on things sold in between states, called tariffs and levies. And this is how the government was raising its money. And the problem was that there were tariffs on just about everything. And specific, I mean, they passed individual taxes on sugar, on paper, on clothing, on steel, on lumber, even on things like gloves. Pretty much anything that people regularly needed to buy, the federal government had put a tax on it. And sometimes this tax was paid by businesses and passed along, and sometimes this tax was paid at a more retail level. But the bottom line is that everybody knew that they were paying this tax, and the tax, because it was a consumption-based tax, really hit those folks who consume things. There wasn't much of a middle class in America in 1913. It was nascent. It was emerging. And the folks who were very wealthy, they were very happy to have this happen because there was no tax on their income. There was no tax on their wealth. There was no tax on the money that they made using money. There was no tax on dividends. There was no tax on the sale of capital gains, the sale of securities, no tax on interest. The only tax that anybody paid was on stuff, tariffs and duties. And what happened was so many people in America were getting so heavily taxed this way, because if 100% of your income goes to buy things, which is the case for more than half of Americans, 100 or nearly 100% of their income goes to buy things that they use on a regular basis, whether it's their home or whether it's a car, whether it's food or clothing or school books or just the stuff. If 100% of your income goes to buy things, and those things are the tax basis for the United States, the tax burden is very heavy. And this is why it is accurate to say, or it was accurate to say, even before this tax law was passed, that Citizens for Tax Justice did an interesting study. They found that if you earn less than $13,000 a year, you are still, even though you pay no federal income tax, you're still paying about 15% of your income in taxes. If you pay, now you are paying, payroll taxes and sales taxes and property taxes. The next fifth up, $13,600 to $24,400, on average they pay about 15% of their income in taxes. Not all of it is income taxes. This is the tricky little deception. Go to Rush Limbaugh's website, and there's a table there about taxes. But it's income taxes. It's not taxes. It's income taxes. Income taxes are the taxes that people who make a lot of money pay. If you're in the literal middle class, the third in the middle, $24,400 to $39,300 a year, you pay about 20% of your pre-tax income. If you make $39,300 to $64,900, you pay about 25% of your income in taxes. And if you're in the top fifth, you pay about 18% of your income in taxes. So it's not all that different. At least this was all before the tax cut. They haven't recalculated these figures. I'm sure that now the tax burden on the top is going to drop. Does government involvement in strengthening the middle class help or hurt democracy? What do you think? So back in 1913, what happened was the people rose up. They said, enough of this. They said that the wealthy in America, this is a quote from Benton McMillan of Tennessee. He says, as you have been enabled to accumulate this wealth by the blessings of free institutions, contribute something to perpetuate them. Now, Congress had tried to pass an income tax law prior to that. In 1895, Congress passed an income tax law to deal with this very problem. That consumption taxes are so regressive that they were harming the ability of a middle class to emerge. So Congress passed an income tax in 1895. And the Supreme Court said the Constitution does not provide for an income tax. It only provides for taxes on tariffs and duties, and they struck it down. So the people all across the United States said, well, if the Constitution isn't going to provide for an income tax, we will. And they amended the Constitution. So now we have all these funny little tricks. The budget of the United States was just published a month or two ago. And in the chapter, and it comes in five telephone book-sized books. They weigh many pounds, a lot of paper. And the overview has all these nice, it's very beautifully done. Federal government spent a lot of money on this thing. And it's got taxes, it's got charts and graphs and photographs and pictures and nice little headlines. And, for example, there is a chapter. There's an interesting essay about this, if you want to get more information, that ran in Harper's, as I recall, called Get Rich or Get Out by Thomas Frank. In a chapter called The Real Fiscal Danger, Frank says, the budget tells us about Social Security and Medicare. In other words, there's a chapter in the federal budget called The Real Fiscal Danger, Social Security and Medicare. And according to Frank, when you cut rich people's taxes, no harm can possibly come. When you offer insurance for the average person's health care and retirement, however, you're playing with fire. Here's an actual sentence from page 31 of the United States budget. Quote, but in 2002, the combined shortfall in Social Security and Medicare of nearly $18 trillion was about five times as large as today's publicly held national debt. Say what? In the budget of the United States, it says Social Security and Medicare are $18 trillion in debt. A study by the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities shows that if the 2001 and 2002 Bush administration tax cuts had not gone into place, our budget would be in balance, and we would be generating surpluses this year. Little side note. But anyhow, the Treasury says $18 trillion. Well, it turns out that that's a cumulative 75-year projection. It's a phony number. In fact, the Social Security Trust Fund is in the black and will be for the next 24 years. I'm sorry, for the next 42 years, until 2042, the next 39 years. How can they get away with this? Stay with the Tom Hartman program. We'll return in just a minute. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risks.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The General helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is. But with the stucco and rock products provided by the General, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll-free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the General. Call 1-866-96-STEEL today.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video, call Power, Performance, and Possibilities. Call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
Get things in my mind, and I say, let's try this.
Dude,
and
here's Nancy in the background.
Nancy.
Oh,
Nancy.
Am I on the air? Oh.
Hello.
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 Sorry.
You're sorry you're on the air?
I'm glad I didn't say something I really shouldn't have said.
Really?
You should have heard what she was telling me a minute ago.
Wow.
Bite me, doughboy. On the IE America Radio Network.
The following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal.
Anaconda. Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
All right, boys, come on.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Better. Welcome to the vast radical middle conspiracy. Take no imitations. This is the Tom Hartman radio program on the IE America radio network. Diane Kay in our chat room says, it seems to me that it makes a great deal of sense to use your vote to make us all better off. If we can strengthen the weakest link, read single moms, we strengthen the whole. I really like that comment, Diane. Diane Kay, thank you very much. Some interesting, very interesting conversation going on in the chat room off TomHartman.com, off the website for our radio show here. And it is about 3 minutes before the hour. We're talking about, does government involvement in strengthening the middle class help or hurt democracy? An interesting quote here from Thomas Jefferson. He wrote a letter to David Williams in 1803. He said, the greatest evils of populist society have ever appeared to me to spring from the vicious distribution of its members among the occupations. He said, when by blind concourse, particular occupations are ruinously overcharged and others left in want of hands, the national equilibrium can do much, the national authorities can do much towards restoring the equilibrium. Saying explicitly that the founders of this country felt that there was a place in the marketplace for government involvement, that an absolutely free marketplace is not free. There's just not the diversity in a marketplace like that. What you end up with is monopoly. Now, there are those on the right and on the left who suggest that the Bill of Rights was not meant to protect human rights, that the Bill of Rights was meant to protect property rights and was a way for the rich, the founders of this country, to protect their riches. They like to quote John Jay, for example, who believed that the upper classes, quote, were a better kind of people, by which I mean people who are orderly and industrious. I would say that's the old Federalist point of view, which is now the Republican point of view, and the Jefferson, which is now the Democratic point of view, represent a very different way of viewing the world. Here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. We'll be back just after the news.
From those ads in Tiananmen Square, it's coming from the fields that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. Disorder from sirens night and day, from the fires.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and for 2 hours every day, I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls. We'll be talking about the stories behind the stories in the day's news. That's the Tom Hartman Program, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to IEAmericaRadio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
This is IE America Radio Network News. I'm Corey Morris. Questions continue to be raised today about the possibility intelligence on Iraq's weapons of mass destruction were exaggerated to justify going to war. The Washington Post today says some CIA analysts actually felt pressure from a top defense official. More on the story from correspondent Laura Yama.
One former defense intelligence official describes Deputy Defense Secretary Paul Wolfowitz as a browbeater who, in his words, treated the analyst's work with contempt. Wolfowitz reportedly wanted to find a link between al-Qaeda and Iraq, pressuring analysts to substantiate allegations in a book tying Iraq to the 1993 World Trade Center bombing. Two Pentagon officials have told reporters there was no pressure on anybody to slant intelligence. Laura Iyama, Washington.
President Bush, meanwhile, told troops in Qatar today the truth will be revealed about Iraq's alleged weapons of mass destruction. Lawmakers are questioning Attorney General John Ashcroft's defense of the Patriot Act today, testifying before the House Judiciary Committee. Ashcroft was grilled about certain provisions in the act. He was asked to justify the stipulation allowing the Justice Department to hold suspected terrorists for up to 7 days. And questions were also raised about labeling certain detainees enemy combatants and not others, and some congressmen expressed concern about the Bush administration's use of military tribunals. The U.S. House has voted now 232-139 to approve a ban on partial birth abortions, a specific procedure performed to abort fetuses in the second trimester. Lower chamber of Congress is dominated by Republicans, and President Bush says he will sign the legislation. More from reporter Priscilla Huff.
The legislation bans a particular procedure that is performed after the 12th week of pregnancy, as the U.S. Senate has already passed a similar bill. If the differences are ironed out and President Bush signs it, the legislation would establish the most significant restrictions on abortion in the U.S. since it was legalized in 1973. Supporters of the bill insist the ban is morally necessary, but opponents of the ban say the battle over abortion is just an attempt by the Republicans to restrict women's rights. Priscilla Huff, Washington.
This is Dr. Danny. Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Dr. Danny.
Hey.
Man, listen, we're having a hard time potty training our son.
Well, that's a common problem. How old is your boy?
He's 26.
Paul, I have some bad news. At this age, potty training will be near impossible.
You kidding me?
No, but Paul, I do have some good news.
All right, man. What?
I just saved a bunch of money on car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
What's the big news in allergy medicine this season? It's a new name in non-drowsy relief. Allivert. New Allivert starts dissolving the instant it touches your tongue. Without water. So you can take Allivert inside, outside, in your car, wherever you are. Allivert is non-drowsy 24-hour relief in a quick-dissolving tablet. New Allivert. Allergy medicine you can take right when you need it, wherever you are. Allivert. Use as directed.
The number of Americans seeking first-time unemployment claims was up by 16,000 last week, surprising most analysts. The Labor Department says jobless claims increased to 442,000 for the week ending May 31st. That's up from 426,000 the previous week. Analysts were looking for about 420,000 first-time claims. Factory orders were down almost 3% in April, their largest drop in 17 months. The Commerce Department says the numbers reflect a sharp decrease in demand for machinery, as well as transportation and electrical equipment. Orders for computers and electronics, though, were up by 0.3%.
I spent years learning to cope with my mental health problems and just as long conquering substance addiction. But I did both, and I'm incredibly proud. But with the world and everything going on today, I get so overwhelmed. It's so tempting to turn to drugs and alcohol to help me escape. But I don't want all of my accomplishments to just go away.
If you or someone you know is abusing drugs and alcohol to cope, get information and treatment referral at 1-800-888-8888. 800-662-HELP.
Time furnished by the Office of National Drug Control Policy.
A new poll has found New Yorkers are sharply divided about the possible motives behind the publishing of Senator Hillary Clinton's new book. More on the story now from correspondent Lisa Romanella, who's in New York City.
Money is the most popular motive in the new Marist poll. One-third surveyed say Senator Clinton wants to make money. 28% say she's setting the stage for a presidential run, and 27% say she wants to tell her side of the story. Among registered voters surveyed statewide, nearly two-thirds also think she will serve out her full six-year term, and 58% do not want her to run for president. If she seeks re-election to the Senate, the poll finds former Mayor Giuliani could unseat her by a margin of 56-39%. Lisa Romanillo, New York.
And home improvement maven Martha Stewart is speaking out now to her supporters in the form of an open letter following her indictment yesterday on charges including obstruction of justice. Stewart asserts her innocence in that letter, which has been published in USA Today and also appears online. I'm Corey Morris, and this is IE America Radio Network News.
Hi, I'm Bobby Likas with today's Car Clinic Minute. Anti-lock brakes, seat belts, and airbags, all ounces of prevention safety that equip today's cars. But when we come back, I'll tell you where there's a pound of cure, just in case you need it.
Asphalt, rubber, metal, speed. This is racing for Tony Stewart, Dale Earnhardt Jr., Matt Kenseth, and John Andretti. There's one more key to racing, Champion Spark Plugs. They race different makes of cars, Chevy, Pontiac, Dodge, Ford. But they all trust Champion because they all have the same destination, the winner's circle. Champion powers all.
Be sure to ask your service technician or auto parts retailer for Champion Spark Plugs.
Today's technology-equipped cars are designed to prevent accidents. But when they happen, it's technology again, this time to the rescue. 1,000 cars in upstate New York are testing automated collision notification. This system uses in-vehicle sensors to detect a crash and then employs a satellite and cellular phone system to relate the severity and location of the accident directly to 911. After receiving this information, the operator then opens a voice line and dispatches emergency assistance. Wow, that sounds like 2 pounds of cure to me. I'm Bobby Likas, brought to you by Champion, the world's favorite spark plug.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Covers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite, channel 145, Sirius Satellite Radio. And who's doing well these days, apparently. And broadcasting live on the Internet, ieamericaradio.com and radiopower.org. Our quote this hour from Samuel Webster in 1777. Let monopolies and all kinds and degrees of oppression be carefully guarded against. We have a report on the Campaign for America's Future. There's a conference going on in Washington, D.C. today, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. It's sponsored by a group called the Campaign for America's Future. It's the National Progressive Conference to Take Back America. And Rob Call, who is the editor of opednews.com, is there and has called in a report to us. Rob, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how's it going?
I am great, but I'll get better. How about you?
Super. Really buzzed. Nope. I'm here with about 1,500 progressives all ready to fight and take on Bush and the Bush regime.
Okay. Give us a snapshot view of what's happened and what the high points of the conference are, Rob.
Well, one of the high points was last night when Bill Moyers spoke. He won an award there. He said it was his third award. He'd won two Republican awards for being biased media, and he was proud of those, too.
Hmm.
But Moyers had some great stuff to say.
For example?
Well, he said, I don't understand why the Democrats are afraid to be labeled as fighting a class war that the other side has already started and is winning.
Hmm. It's a good one.
Yeah.
It's interesting how you notice. I drove to the dentist yesterday, and in the car, I turned on the car, and there was Rush Limbaugh. And it was so interesting that the things he was accusing Democrats of and doing with great ferocity, you know, these nasty, rah, 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 were the things that he was doing. It was just, they point and say, class war, as they're declaring class war. So anyway, what else has happened, Rob?
Well, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky from Chicago was saying that they think that God is a Republican. It's a guiding premise for their administration, and their God happens to be homophobic and anti-choice. And she says, don't take it when they attack dissent as unpatriotic. Call them liars. And Wes Boyd said, when we fight, we get stronger. And he has statistics to show it. He said it's about leadership. Every time that Move On has demonstrated leadership, their mailing list just jumps in size.
Sure. Well, I think that people are, I have had so many people call this program and say that they feel a lack of hope, that they feel depressed, that they feel worried. You know, what's the direction of the country? Are we sliding back into a neo-feudalism? Are the fascists taking over? All these kinds of things. And I have, as you know, Rob, I have considerable hope for America, and I know that you do too, or you wouldn't be running opednews.com. And I think that I think Wes Boyd is right. When progressives step up, stand forward, and say, hey, we have a vision too. We have a clear vision of what this country can be, and it's a vision that is both new and old. It's a vision that was first articulated by Thomas Jefferson. That I people want to rally around it.
Well, there's some hope too. Stan Greenberg, one of the opening speakers, he's the chairman and CEO of Greenberg Quinlan Rosner Research, which is a polling organization that is pretty big. Said that the country is evenly split but becoming increasingly polarized. And when it comes with Bush competing for president, he's not that far ahead. If you just look at Bush versus any Democrat, he only gets 52 to 48%.
Against generic unnamed Democrat?
Pardon me?
Against generic unnamed Democrat?
That's right.
That's interesting.
If you look at what people think about tax cuts, 68% of them would rather them spend money on domestic programs rather than having tax cuts. So he's way behind on that issue. And there are a bunch of issues where he is behind. Then there are areas where the Republicans are winning, which is security. They have a clear direction on principles and values. And they're unified. 95% of Republicans will vote for Bush for president.
Yeah. And don't you think 95% of Democrats will vote for whoever gets is the party's appointee?
Well, that's the big question. We've got more Democrats than Republicans in this country.
Yeah, but only by about 3%. My recollection is 32% of Americans identify themselves as Democrats and 29% as Republicans.
That's right. Well, Kim Gandy was on. She's the president of the National Organization for Women, and she said now, a number of people have said, we've got about 17, 18 months now where we have to do more than we've ever done before. I got a call from one of my readers at opednews.com, I call an email, telling me that we're going to have a Bush in the president's office till 2016.
Oh, they're grooming Jeb right now. Sean Hannity is trotting him out every week on TV. Any other high points there from the show, Rob? Any other quick news reports for
us? Well, they had three times the turnout that they had the year before. There's just the energy is palpable. You can feel it.
Yeah.
There's 1,500 people here who are ready to go back and take on the right. And the thing is, it's something that you don't have to be here to benefit from, because it's good to know that there are 1,500 progressives who are tough and vehement and ready to fight. They're ready to take on the schoolyard bullies and stand up to them and turn things around and take the country back, which is what this is all about.
Okay, great. Thanks for joining us today on the Tom Hartman Program. Rob Call from opednews.com with a report from the Campaign for America's Future, the National Progressive Caucus or Conference in Washington, D.C. to take back America. Rob, thank you very much. If you'd like to be on the program today, our number is 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. And in this hour, I'd like to talk about, by destroying diversity, are we putting the human race at risk? Are we harming democracy? With a small d in the short term, and are we actually harming the potential for ourselves, for our own future, our own survival? We find that diversity is so critically important in so many different realms, and a lot of people don't make the leap. They don't see how, you know, they may understand the need for biodiversity, but they don't understand the need for economic diversity. They may understand the need for economic diversity. They don't understand the need for social diversity, for racial diversity, for all these different. And so let's just examine a few of these and get a handle on, get a little clearer vision, maybe tell the stories of the significance of diversity and how a destruction of diversity, the ongoing destruction of diversity, actually, in many regards, in many realms, may put the human race itself, or is putting the human race itself, at risk. We have, I mean, one out of three Americans right now will get cancer in their lifetimes. This is unprecedented. And there are some who suggest that this has to do with the lack of diversity in our food supplies. The studies that indicate that a little bit of selenium in the diet, for example, is anti-cancer. Well, what's happened to the selenium in the diet? Well, part of it is factory farming processes, that we're just stripping the diversity of minerals out of the soil and replacing them with just two or three minerals, putting back phosphorus and potassium and you know, just a couple, and nitrogens. And as a result, our food doesn't have the diversity of nutrients, the micronutrients that it once had. Similarly, there are those who suggest, there's a marvelous book called Stone Age Economics. I'm drawing a blank on the author's name right now. Stephen Mithen, I think, wrote it. And in this book, he talks about how the average person prior to the agricultural revolution, prior to 8,000 years ago, or when you look at tribal people today who still live the way people lived more than 8,000 years ago, that the pre-agricultural revolution people, that is the hunters, not the farmers, typically ate over 1,000 different foods in the course of a year, 1,000 different types of plants and animals, whereas a typical American eats fewer than 50. Think of all the different vegetables that you eat in your diet. How many are there? Yeah, there's green peppers and tomatoes and potatoes and onions, and then the list starts getting thinner. Well, maybe zucchini. But once you've gone past about 10 or 15 of them, then the list really drops off. It wasn't always that way. We used to eat a wide variety of stuff. We used to eat wild things, what we call wild things now. And we used to eat different parts of animals, those of us who ate animals, and, you know, eat the brains and the nervous system and the bones and the marrow. And in all of this, there was diversity, dietary diversity. And in this book, Stone Age Economics, he points out how when you look at the skeletons of these ancient people, or when you look at living hunting-gathering people today who eat these diverse diets, they tend to have a longer lifespan than do we in an industrialized, agriculturalized society when you take out the variable of antibiotics. Our lifespan only exceeded that of what we call primitive people for the first time after World War I with the introduction of sulfa drugs. Prior to that, from the development of civilization 7,000 years ago with Gilgamesh up until World War I, those people who lived in civilized agricultural societies lived a shorter lifespan, lost more teeth, and were physically smaller than hunting-gathering people because of a diversity in their food supply. Our question, by destroying diversity, are we putting the human race at risk? This is one dimension of it, just us and our food. Ecosystems. Dr. Edwin O. Wilson of Harvard University suggests that one of the world's most famous biologists and the author of a new book on this topic, the name of which is just beyond my ability to grasp it here in my brain. It's floating around there. It'll probably come to me when I'm not trying to think of it. It was recently, last year, serialized, or part of it was run in Scientific American magazine, suggests that we're losing 120 species a day in this world. Jeff in Denver has called 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program, Jeff.
Hi, Tom. What if I'm
for joining
world
us.
Is, what we do is, if we don't understand something, if we don't know, for example, if we need a mineral or not,
right.
The medical community and the nutritional community says, oh, we don't need it, we don't know.
Right.
So they tend to leave it out if they don't understand it, rather than say, hey, we don't know, we probably might need it. Linus Pauling said something to the effect that the root of all diseases is the deficiency of minerals.
Yeah, I think that he's probably right.
Yeah, and having been someone who's dealt with fibromyalgia for many years and clinically depressed for many years, I got over everything through diet, especially electrolytes.
The studies on... I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I said especially electrolytes.
Yeah. The studies, Jeff, and we're out of time. Do you want me to hold you over the break? Because we've got... Okay. We're coming up on a break here. The studies that are being done now on fish oils and supplementing diets just with essential fatty acids are amazing. These things are curing depression, and they're doing wonders with schizophrenics, that the brain needs fats. The body, the bones need minerals, and we're losing these things. Stay with the Tom Hartman Program. We'll return in just a few minutes, and Jeff, hang on. We'll come back in about 4 minutes here.
This message is brought to you from American Atlantic Financial Corporation. Doesn't it pique your interest to discover how profits could potentially be made in markets like sugar, coffee, gold, foreign currencies, grains, unleaded gasoline, heating oil? Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive a free video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities at no cost or obligation by just dialing toll-free 1-888-247-8400. That's 1-888-247-8400. American Atlantic Financial Corporation specializes in identifying undervalued opportunities and brings them to qualified investors. Call American Atlantic Financial Corporation and receive our latest recommendation. For your free investor's kit and video called Power, Performance, and Possibilities, call toll-free 1-888-247-8400. The call is free. The video is free by just dialing 1-888-247-8400. Futures and options involve significant risk of loss and is not suitable for everyone.
Do you want to own a computer but have less than perfect credit, bad credit, no credit? No problem. If you have a checking or savings account and can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months, Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved, guaranteed. You heard right. You're approved for a brand new name brand computer. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now. If you can afford a payment of as little as $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, you're already approved. Guaranteed. Call 1-800-823-0157 right now and tell us where you want your brand new name brand computer delivered. If you can afford $35 a week for just 12 months and have a checking or savings account, your brand new state-of-the-art PC will be on its way. Guaranteed. Bad credit, no problem. Blue Hippo Funding says you're approved for the computer of your dreams. Guaranteed. Call right now, 1-800-823-0157.
If you're among the millions of workers and shareholders who are sick of seeing your companies crash while the pampered CEOs who caused the wreck skip gaily away with tens of millions of dollars in lavish pay packages, you might want to look to England for hope. There's been a long simmering political debate across the pond about the unseemly self-enrichment of their corporate chieftains. Even though CEO pay there still is a fraction of the sums paid to corporate royalty here in America. But some British wannabes have been steadily pushing to bring buccaneering off-the-charts U.S.-style pay levels to England. For example, the aptly named Sir Christopher Hogg, chairman of the global drug giant GlaxoSmithKline, claims that British pay levels must become competitive with the king's ransoms paid to American CEOs. Hogwash, shout England's shareholder and worker groups, who've seen the destructive results in America when the fortunes of top executives are separated from the well-being of everyone else. These egalitarian forces have been fighting the Sir Hogs and winning. In January, a new law passed requiring large British corporations to, one, disclose details of pay packages, and, two, put them to a vote by shareholders. The law is working. In May, shareholders and union pensioners gave Sir Hogg's own corporation a comeuppance, voting down the proposed deal for Glaxo's CEO, who would have gotten a special $24 million payout even if he had bankrupted the company. Now, to avoid similar public humiliation, honchos at the retailing giant Kingfisher are scaling down their extravagant deals prior to facing shareholders at their upcoming meeting. This is Jim Hightower saying, the rebellion is on. And not only are the Brits storming the barricades of CEO power, but it's happening here, too. To help foster the rebellion among American shareholders, call United for a Fair Economy, 617-423-2148.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
And welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Are we destroying the human race by destroying diversity? Jeff in Denver, you had a final comment there to make, I think, and we ran up against a commercial break. I assume you're still with us?
Yes. Yeah, I've seen is it was interesting that I used to go to a fibromyalgia support group, and virtually nobody there was getting better. They found ways to, they'd always talk about, we're trying this drug, we're trying that, whatever, except for two people. They both changed their diet. It was myself and another person. And by getting that diversity, especially working on the mineral aspect and working on getting a lot more liquids, it changed everything. My life changed. Yeah. My mind changed. My emotions changed dramatically.
That's wonderful.
No drugs needed. And, what we have is deficient soil producing deficient vegetables in a society where people are stressed and, peeing out B vitamins like hell because of overstress, and we're not resupplying ourselves.
Yeah, I agree. Jeff, thank you for sharing that with us, and thanks for joining us here on the Tom Hartman Program today. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. At the bottom of the hour, we're going to have an extraordinary man on as a guest, Robert Wolf. We'll be getting to him in about 5 minutes. Mac in Santa Fe is on the line. Welcome to the program, Mac.
Hi there. Yeah, this is Mac. I just wanted to tell you that I've been listening to you and Jim Hightower and Mike Malloy and Pete Weaver and a few others, as well as, when I can have the stomach for it, Mr. Savage or Dr. Savage. Just keep doing what you're doing because we need folks like you to help us interpret these massive heaps of information and statistics and all the rest of it, and
thank you, Mac.
Reinforces my profound faith in the cumulative wisdom of our voting folks.
Thank you.
Just keep a doing what you're doing, please.
I will. I promise. Thank you for calling and thanks for listening. I very much appreciate your call and your kind comments, Mac in Santa Fe. It's interesting. We were having this conversation a couple of days ago with some friends, and somebody made the remark, "Oh, the American people will vote for anybody. They'll believe anything that's delivered to them on TV." Blah 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 blah. And Bush massively outspent Al Gore in the 2000 election. Republicans are outspending Democrats almost 2-1 in a lot of races, and yet the Democrats, even when they don't win, they're coming within shooting distance. I think that the American people are a lot smarter than we're giving them credit for, than people in general. And certainly I think they're a lot smarter than right-wing talk show hosts give them credit for. That people can see through the lies and the BS that are out there, that it's people are just saying, hey, it's okay, we figured out your agenda of promoting corporate power and corporate wealth, and we know that that doesn't help diversity. It doesn't help America. It doesn't. It's not going to bring the kind of world that we want to live in. That a corporate, a feudal corporate, fascist order, as it were, a feudal corporate empire running America, where only CEOs can be president and vice president, only CEOs need be appointed cabinet ministers and whatnot. Only the wealthy should run for political office. This is not the kind of America that the founders envisioned or that we want. People say, well, the founders were all rich guys. No. Number one, the founders were not all rich guys. And number two, even those who were, compared to British standards of rich, were just the high end of middle class. Yeah, there were a few who were very wealthy. But actually, I want to get into that tomorrow. I want to just share with you who the founders were and what they did, the people who signed the Declaration of Independence. We'll get into that tomorrow. It's an interesting one. Here with the Tom Hartman Program, where democracy is still alive and well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with Robert Wolf, a wonderful man.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Cleaning up industry creates a multitude of new business opportunities, according to an environmental consultant. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. Home Depot has responded to critics who want the company to stop selling lumber from old-growth forests, but it wasn't easy, according to George Basile.
That created a need for a whole new way to track, monitor, measure, and evaluate where you're getting your wood.
Basile is a vice president of the Natural Step, an environmental research and consulting firm based in San Francisco. He says Home Depot's need was someone else's opportunity to create a tracking system for their wood supplies. Other companies need help cutting energy costs or reducing their use of toxic chemicals. Basile says these kinds of opportunities abound as industries are forced to cut pollution and waste or choose to do so on their own to become more efficient.
When you start thinking about how you want to make a more environmentally sustainable and socially sustainable product, it drives innovation within these businesses so that people start to figure out better ways to do things, more efficient ways to do things, things that bring dollars to the bottom line through efficiency, bring dollars through creating new markets and new ideas.
Basile says environmental creativity boosts the economy just like any other new product or service, and he says innovation is a limitless resource.
One idea creates the space for more and more ideas, which is actually sort of how an ecosystem works. The more life you have, the more life you can have.
Basile says improving the environmental performance of industry isn't only about limits, it's also about opportunities. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
Truth Seekers, this is Kathy Bay, producer of The Mike Malloy Show on the IE America Radio Network. I invite you to join Mike Malloy every night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time for 3 hours of passionate, progressive political talk radio. Stay connected. Join Mike Malloy as he heats up the airwaves on the radio, the Internet, and Sirius Satellite Channel 145. Join the resistance. Listen weeknights at 9 p.m. and give Mike a call. 1-800-TALK-YES.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time every Sunday. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com. And join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, right here on the IE America Radio Network.
of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tight to your dreams, yes indeed. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. This is it's Thursday afternoon, in our second hour of Thursday afternoon, we usually do a segment called Everything You Know Is Wrong, where I try to get into something beyond just politics and crack open our worldviews a little bit. Sometimes I have on people I disagree with, sometimes people that I agree with. Today's guest has, this man, Robert Wolfe, wrote a book called Original Wisdom. And not only have I read this book, I wrote the foreword for it. I was so amazed by this book. This book changed my life. And every person I know who has read Robert Wolfe's book, Original Wisdom, it has changed their lives. Louise and I were so extraordinarily amazed by this book that we have made two pilgrimages out to Hawaii, where Robert lives, to sit and talk with him and just get to know him and learn what he has to offer. Robert, his website is www.wildwolf, wolf has two F's on the end, .com. And Robert talks about the diversity in worldviews and cultures, carrying on this theme of worldviews. And Robert, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Thank you. Welcome. Thank you.
I'm so pleased to have you on. You are one of my mentors. Yeah. Can you hear us?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's morning there, isn't it? You're on the big island of Hawaii?
Yeah. I hope you won't be distracted by the roosters who are all around here.
Okay, great. Just to let our listeners know, Robert Wolfe lives in Hawaii. He's lived in many other places and has known interesting people everywhere. He grew up in a very small town in Indonesia in a culture very different from today's worldwide Western culture. His experiences with other people have made him sensitive to the different ways that people see what is real. Robert, what does the word real mean to you?
Well, I came to that after thinking about, people talk about reality. And in our society, reality means what you can measure, what you can feel, what you can touch. But what I mean actually is more like, how do we see the world? How do we perceive the world? And to give you an example, one of the ways that I learned about that is by different languages, because a language, I think, is an expression of a culture, but it's also an expression of a worldview. And to give you an example, in Hawaiian, the language of Hawaii, the word for horizon is po'ai lani, and po'ai means round, and lani is sky. So it's like the round sky around us. And we think in the West that horizon is something flat. You know, it's a line, it's a horizontal line. But when you live on an island or you're on a boat in the middle of the Pacific, the horizon, of course, is all around you. And it is a round line. It's not so that changes your perception of the world.
Mm-hmm.
To give but on another dimension, to give another example, I grew up speaking Malay. And
That was your first language, Robert?
Yeah, well, first or second. I grew up speaking three languages, so it's all the same. But anyway, in Malay, at that time, there was no word for personal possessive pronouns. You could not say, my wife, my children.
Hmm.
Now, when you think about that, you can imagine that you think about children very differently than we do. We think of children as property, or we think of our wives as property. You know, it's kind of like it belongs to me. But if you don't have that word, that's an indication that those people look at wives and children as different than we do.
Yes.
So it's a very different view of reality.
Yes, that's remarkable. And that's the impact of language on... I remember the year that Louise and I lived in Germany, I was struck by how in the business world, they use the metaphors of warfare all the time. They would say in German, the equivalent of in English, saying, you know, in English we'd say, okay, we're going to beat that company, or we're going to you know, win the marketplace or something. We use the metaphors of sports, I think, more often. They would say, we are absolutely going to crush and destroy them with a lightning battle, you know, those kinds of things. And it seems that every culture reflects itself in its language. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about this Sonoy, these extraordinary people that you got to know when you were in, it was in Malaysia or Indonesia?
Yeah, it was in Malaysia. Yeah, I worked in Malaysia for several years, and I was fortunate to happen to meet people that are called Aborigines. They were like the original people. They're thought to be the remnants of the first people who lived in that part of the world.
Yes.
There were very few of them, and they were living in the deep jungle at the time. And through really an accident, I got to meet them. But from the beginning, they really impressed me as something very different. And because I speak Malay, there was always somebody who could speak a few words of Malay, and we could communicate. But there was something about those people that, for some reason, I've thought about this a lot, that it made a great impression on me. I think because, to me, it felt that they still were in a state that all of us have been thousands of years ago. You know, it was like meeting the original template of what humans, you know, what humans were like before we got civilized.
Like being in the Garden of Eden, as it were.
Something like that. I mean, they were very poor, and they didn't have anything. I mean, they were very primitive in some ways, but they were very happy. They were very joyful. They sang a lot. One of the important things I found out when I stayed overnight, which I'm sometimes, was that dreams are very important to them, and to them, the dream world is the real world, and the world that we live in, that we consider real, is a shadow. It's a shadow of the real world. And so they're very serious about, in the morning, the first thing they do is sit around in a circle in their little tiny huts, you know, five or six people. And they will share what they remember of their dreams. And this is everybody, old people, young people, children. And usually, you know, your dreams are not stories. They're just fragments of words, ideas, thoughts, pictures. But sometimes, not always, but sometimes somebody would sort of weave together these pieces, bits and pieces that people had dreamed together, I mean, in the same space. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there would appear a story, you know, some kind of a picture of. And the dreams really sort of determined what their lives would be like that day. I mean, each day was like the expression of the dream they had had the night before. And the few times that I was able to check it out, so to speak, I found that what they dreamed actually happened, what actually took place.
So they were dreaming the future.
Well, the immediate future, usually, you know, it's what, like today. One day I remember that they dreamed about some very special plant, and that the plant, very unusual plant, and I found out later that it really is a very unusual plant. And for some reason, they all knew where it was. And so later that day, I remember I had forgotten about this whole thing, but about maybe 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning, somebody, a child actually, a little girl, came to me and said, well, let's go. I said, go where? Well, go to see this plant. So she took me on this little hike through the jungle to a clearing, and there was this plant in the whole village, the whole settlement. I mean, there were like 12 people. Mm-hmm. They were sitting around, just sitting there, watching that plant. And it was amazing. I mean, I don't know why they knew it, but they did.
Yeah. That's remarkable. We're speaking with Robert Wolff, W-O-L-F-F. His website is wildwolf.com. He's the author of, in my opinion, one of the most important books to have been published in the 20th century. It's called Original Wisdom. You can find it in any bookstore, on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and whatnot. And Robert, tell us the story of, and it's about 20, no, it's about 18 minutes before the hour here on the Tom Hartman program. Robert, tell us the story of the person who was waiting for you on the path. How whenever you showed up, well, I don't want to tell the story for you. You tell us the story. This was
well, actually, it's not one person, but during the two and a half years that we were there, I probably saw, I went to many different settlements, you know, because whenever I went there on weekends or when I had time, but because we were living in Malaysia. But so when I went there, it was usually I had to walk through the jungle like 3 or 4 or 5 hours. And so usually when I left, they said, oh, you should visit so-and-so other place. And they would tell me where to go, how to find the path and so forth. And so whenever I had time, and I didn't know always when I would have time, I would decide that I would go visit this other settlement. And they never knew. I couldn't tell them that I was coming. But everywhere I went, I mean, without exception, everywhere I went, when I got there, just before I got there, like say half an hour before I got to the settlement, there would be somebody on the path. And sometimes I was alone, sometimes with somebody else. When we came, this person would stand up and walk in front of us. I mean, not a word was said. It was just, so I was very curious, and I kept asking people, how did you know I was coming? And they always said, no, I didn't know you were coming. So why were you there? Well, I was just there. Later on, I figured that, I found out that it had something to do with the dreams, that in the dreams they had learned to sit somewhere on a path, and then whatever would happen would happen. And what happened was that I came.
Right.
This is now several years, many years ago, but it gave me, it made it very clear to me that we as humans had many other senses, many other qualities and talents that we have lost in our civilization. I'm quite convinced that humans were able to commune with each other without words, as we can communicate with our animals without words. I mean, it's very clear, anybody who has a dog or a pet or of any kind, that, you know, we can communicate with our cats and dogs, and they can communicate with us.
Yes.
And I'm sure we communicated with each other that way, too. And words...
Well, Robert...
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry.
You
told me a story about a time that you had gone with a fellow down who had never seen the ocean before. With your permission, I should let our listeners know, you know, your background. You have 2 PhDs, as I recall?
Yeah.
In psychology and sociology. And you were in some...
Social psychology and...
Social psychology. And in some of this, you were for a short while apparently working for the Malay government to
No, I didn't work for the Malay government. I worked for the University of California, San Francisco Medical.
Yeah, that's right.
And they sent us out to Malaysia.
Right. Okay. And you had to go from one of these communities down to an oceanside community, and you took one of the folks with you,
right.
And he had a conversation with the ocean.
That was strange because he had never seen the ocean, you know, because they live in the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people there, there was a meeting there that I had to go to, and I took him along. And so I didn't pay attention to what he was doing. But the next day, when we got back to his village, to his settlement, I found out that he had had this experience of the ocean, that the ocean was something very special that he had not seen and experienced before.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a sort of a ceremony that he conducted in the evening where he told the people about the ocean. And, you know, and they didn't know ocean. The only water they knew was the little streams that run through the jungle.
Mm-hmm.
So he described the ocean in such detail that I was totally astonished and amazed. I never understood how he knew. He described the ocean as surrounding the entire world, and that the land was floating on the ocean, And he said that the ocean inside, down below the ocean, was just like the Earth. It had mountains and streams and valleys and rivers. I had no idea how he knew that, but he did. He told us about that.
And he had just stood by the side of the ocean there for a few hours. And apparently communicated with it.
Well, obviously he had some insight in what was, he knew. Yeah. And again, that's another of those qualities that I think we had. You know, I've always been interested in what it's called native healing or indigenous healing practices. Mm-hmm. And we in the West think in terms of, you know, this herb is for this condition. But in actual fact, of course, it's not like that. It's much more complicated. As you said, you know, the diversity in nature is just unbelievable, and it's absolutely necessary ecologically. But when I started to study different kind of medicine, the anthropologists usually think that native peoples all over the world, primitive people, learn the value of herbs through trial and error. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, you know, that's pretty difficult because some of the herbs people use have very complicated ways of preparing them, making them. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to cook them and sieve them and change them and dry them.
Right.
How do you find out? I mean, I'm positive that there always have been people who can sense, who have a feeling about what element in the plant is healing or important for health.
Who could just communicate with it. Robert, thank you so much for being with us on the program today and for sharing this with us. This is Robert Wolff, W-O-L-F-F. His website is wildwolf.com, www.wildwolf.com. He's the author of Original Wisdom, which is one of the most extraordinary books you will ever read in your life. Robert, thank you so much for joining us. I very much appreciate it. Thanks for being on the program today. Talk radio for the rest of us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
When I fell, my doctor didn't give me Tylenol. She gave me Advil.
I was surprised. My doctor gave me Advil for my back.
Advil is my doctor's choice for muscle pain.
Truth is, doctors nationwide choose Advil most for tough muscle pain, strains, and sprains. Advil can give you longer-lasting relief than Tylenol on tough pain.
Now I always make sure I have Advil in the house.
Make the doctor's choice your choice. For better relief, advance to Advil.
Nice drive, Jim.
Thanks. You know, I wish my business plan was a straight. We just can't grow anymore with our current facility. I've looked at the price to build, but I'm afraid to spend the money.
Jim, I've known you since you've started your business. You succeeded because you made tough decisions and took risk.
Well...
Look, I had the same problem, but I called General Steel Corporation. The general helped me build my new office and warehouse, and I stayed within my budget. I couldn't believe the time and money I saved compared to traditional construction.
That's a steel building?
It sure is, but with the stucco and rock products provided by the general, you just can't tell. They engineered the building for this area and to fit my needs. When the economy rebounds, I'll be ready to gain market share.
Save time and money with a General Steel building. Call toll free 1-866-96-STEEL. Whether you need a 40 by 60 for under $13,000 or a 60 by 200 for under $49,000, call 1-866-96-STEEL. If you need space, you need the general. Call 1-866-96-STEEL. 96 Steel today.
Attention all plaintiffs. Personal injury, negligence, premises liability, medical malpractice, product liability, commercial cases. Receive up to $50,000 instant cash assistance. Call now, 800-586-5493. Get cash now on your pending lawsuit. No risk, no payments. We only collect when your case is settled. Call 800-586-5493. Express Lawsuit Funding can help you. 800-586-5493.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do, being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals?
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer? You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Anaconda.
Budgie.
Camel.
Dick Dick.
Emu.
Frog.
Gopher.
Hyena.
Iguana.
Jaguar.
Cuda Mundi.
Llama.
Minx.
Animal Narwhal. Talk. We talk Oscar. About what you do to your animals and what your animals do to you. Mark, Donna, and Dr. Brad answer all your animal questions from A to Z. Sunday nights on IE America Radio Network. Penguin.
Quail.
Rooster.
Seal.
Tortoise.
Vampire bats.
Peter Werby Show is now airing at a new time. Hi, it's Julene Jordan. The IE America Radio Network has added many exciting new shows to the lineup, and in doing so, the Peter Werby Show has a new time slot. It's weekdays, 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern. Join us as we share with you progressive views about peace and social justice that you won't find in the corporate and conservative media. Join us 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern on the IE America Radio Network. For more information, go to www.ieamericaradio.com. From the network that brings you different points of view from the likes of Peter Werby and Mike Malloy, now a different point of view on the news. IE America is proud to present WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. WINS is a unique news service that focuses on issues that affect our daily lives. WINS is not about what big business wants you to hear. WINS is about us. To hear WINS, go to ieamericaradio.com and click on WINS. If you like what you hear, call your local radio station and say you want WINS. It's something different. It's from IE America and WINS.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Be happy. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry you make it double. Don't worry, be happy. Don't worry, be happy.
Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. I think judging from the response of the folks, the dozen or so folks in our chat room, Robert's appearance was a big hit. People are, oh, you don't know how much I appreciated that, and this was wonderful. Robert Wolf, the author of Original Wisdom, an extraordinary book. One of the things that is a spinoff from the worldview that Robert experienced and that I've seen in my travels around the world, I've hung out with, worked with, lived with Aboriginal people in Africa, in South America, in North America, all the way up to into the extreme north, and in Asia, is that in Aboriginal cultures, I've written about this in two books that I wrote, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight and The Prophet's Way, particularly in The Prophet's Way. In Aboriginal societies, there's this concept that the purpose of society is to provide safety and security for its members. Now, we in Western society have this very different notion. We have concluded that what you do all day long in culture is you make stuff. And if you make enough stuff, then you get to consume stuff. And so we have this cycle of making and consuming, making and consuming, making and consuming. In ancient indigenous Aboriginal cultures, what you find is that people make stuff, but it's only an occasional thing and it's only out of necessity. That really what culture makes, what everybody does, is they provide for the safety and security of everybody in the society. And what you consume from the society is that safety and security. And I would say that these two worldviews on a political stage are also represented by the what you could call conservatives and liberals, or the left and the right, or the Republicans and the Democrats, that the very conservative worldview is make stuff, buy stuff, he who dies with the most toys wins. Freedom equals the ability to own stuff. Whereas the more progressive worldview, the democratic worldview, is we're all in this together, and what we have to make for each other is a world that works, and out of that we can enjoy the fruits of a world that works. You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program, talk radio for the rest of us. Tune back in tomorrow, same time, same place.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program.